Good morning, you're listening to Galway Talks with John Morley, and we're giving you the chance to win now, because would you like to go to the Black and Irish event in the Town Hall this Saturday at 11 o'clock in the morning or 2:30 in the afternoon? If you do want to go to that as part of the Corch Festival, text in Town Hall to 086 38 33 553, and do so straight away. I'm joined across from me now for financial advice by Dave McCarthy of McCarthy & Associates. Dave, good morning. My name's John Morley, by the way. let's compose yourself, Dave.
Good morning, John.
Your first question, I'm just going to ignore that altogether. Your first question, Dave: I'm about to retire and I have no idea what options, if any, I have with my pension funds. Please help.
Well, to be honest with you, this is one area that people should have to, and it's, I think it's essential to get advice. Making a decision yourself without the knowledge and understanding of what the decisions, implications, decisions you're making are. For example, when people leave an employment, very often they have got a number of options that they can take, and they will get correspondence from the trustees or the pension advisors that are handling it. Now, the options for somebody who's self-employed is different to the options for somebody who is in employment. And I'm not going to go into the options side of it this morning, because that question is about getting advice. It is absolutely vital you go to somebody who knows what they're talking about, in other words, a professional, to make it before you make a decision. Because you could be making a decision that's completely incorrect for you. And sometimes the options you're given, there may be an extra option that's not in the documentation you've been given. And that's because there's a way of drawing down sometimes a pension that gives you an extra option, to keep it simple. Bottom line is, get advice. Okay. Very important.
Yeah. Another question: I find it very hard to get my head around what investment options are out there. Can you help?
Look, there are a number of things you need to consider when you're making investment. Like, first of all, security. Do you want security? Is there security attached to it? Is that a priority for you? I've often said security is something people shouldn't really be thinking about, because it does impact return. Do you need access to this money? Well, in other words, do you need access to it during the investment term? Most investments are for at least a period of 5 years. If you do need access, well, then you need to factor that into it, because, to be honest with you, you shouldn't be looking to access any investment that will affect performance. What kind of tax are you going to pay in it? And then the other thing is, what types of investments? Generally, they fall into two areas: unit-linked funds, which are issued by insurance companies, and then you've got investments called structured funds, and there's a variety of those out there. So it is quite a complex area. But again, I go back to the same principle as the previous question we had: advice. Really important advice. Yeah. You don't make and diagnose yourself with a health issue without going to a medical professional. Same is true in both of those areas.
Okay. Another interesting one: Aviva has joined the health insurance market.
Yeah, they used to be in the health insurance market some years ago and pulled out of it. Look, with the rising cost of premiums, it's really important, I suppose, that we have more choice in the market. Like, if you take, for example, general insurance, things like car insurance and house insurance, those kind of areas, there's loads of competition there. But the health insurance market is a much more complex area for a company to provide a product in. So, yes, I think it has to be welcomed, and hopefully it'll help to reduce premiums through competition with the others out there. But it'll remain to be seen the impact of Aviva coming into the market will be.
Mm. Now, another topic: a report recommends financial institutions help tackle financial abuse.
Yeah, I mean, it's a disturbing thing to think that there is such a thing as elder financial abuse. And it's not just with elder people, I suppose it's people within families and friends who maybe are vulnerable when it comes to financial issues. And it's more wide-ranging than we realise. I mean, people, organisations like Age Action Ireland and that have been highlighting this for many, many years, where somebody tries to take control of your finances, somebody tries to dominate you financially. I mean, for example, I suppose we think of financial abuse particularly with older people, but it can happen within a couple, where one is dominating the other person financially, husband, wife, vice versa, or partners, or whatever, and they intimidate them into so that the other person who's intimidating gets access to their funds. So the Law Reform Commission have brought out a report the last couple of days, and they've said that one of the issues that they are asking and will be progressing with financial institutions is to make them legally obligated to act where they see issues of financial abuse. it won't make them liable. In other words, say, for example, if staff are, which they will be trained in this area to spot financial abuse, are kind of highlighting it for the person or the victim involved, if they give the wrong advice or if they give advice, they won't be liable themselves. But I think it's a very good step, and it will make financial institutions have them involved in spotting financial abuse. Because remember one thing, I remember myself, my banking days, somebody comes up to the counter with another person, and they're standing there in front of you, and you're thinking, you know, and the person whose account it is saying very little, and then you get a bad feeling in the back of your neck, and you know there's something going on here.
Now, another issue, don't be fooled by fake online financial ads using well-known faces.
Yeah, this is something that constantly creeps up, and we all know about the importance of not taking financial steps on the basis of something you see that's proposed or given to you or proposed to you or you come across on the internet. But like some of these companies or some of these fraudsters are very sophisticated, and a lot of well-known people out there have had their faces and their names used in connection with financial products that are purportedly trying to sell, which of course is fraud. So, and we've seen a number of court cases where some well-known people have taken the likes of the providers like Facebook or whoever to court because that's happening. But again, it comes back to the simple thing. For God's sake, be careful about dealing with online sites unless you do unless you do your research. And it is possible to do your research. And again, if something pops up in your inbox uninitiated from somebody and, oh, this looks great, proper financial advice and steps will never be initiated out of the blue.
Okay. Now, another issue, why fear in making financial decisions can be helpful, but it can also get out of control and out of hand and cause people to stagnate.
Yeah, again, it's quite a common thing. You know, I'm fearful about making a decision about an investment. I'm fearful about making that decision or what to do with putting extra money into pension. It could be any sort of financial area. But, you know, if you're going to allow your financial life to be ruled by fear, you'll stagnate and you won't do anything. Now, fear is not a bad thing if it's controlled, you know, in the financial area. It's okay. It might sharpen you up and kind of make you aware of issues that maybe you might have been a bit relaxed about, but then it can get out of hand and then it can stagnate and you paralyze and you don't make a decision in relation to anything, and that's ridiculous, really.
Now, the final one, the pension auto-enrollment. What do we know so far?
Well, look, the one thing I'll just say about pension auto-enrollment, there's been a lot of publicity about it, and it's supposed to be kind of kicking in fully next year. This is something that's been going on, John, for as long as I'm in the business. It's gone on for years and years. They've finally come up with a template, right? But I would just caution one thing. I don't know if it's going to come in next year in the way that they're saying, because there is a serious kickback from employers over this. And with the cost of business problems that business are having out there, and this is another major, cost factor for them. So whether it's going to come in a slightly different guise or whether it may even be delayed, I don't know. Very simply, it provides for the individual, the employer and the government to each contribute equally to the contributions. And then it's mandatory for everybody to take out, for every employer to take out the scheme. It's not mandatory for the employees to have to join it. But I think it's an area that we're going to come back to later in the year, John, when we know exactly what's happening in terms of its implementation. So maybe around the autumn, we'll do maybe a special on this. But that's the bones of it. And I suppose, as I said, there's even indications from the Minister for Finance and even the Taoiseach, you know, that there are serious problems in the cost to business out there. And auto-enrollment is one of them. And we'll see what happens.
Okay, Dave McCarthy of McCarthy & Associates, thank you for joining us in Galway Talks. Two coming up next that you'll quite enjoy. We hear from Galway's only not-for-profit yoga studio, and as well as that, Galway soprano Helen Hannock is to give concerts in Galway and Germany as well. So there are two that I know you have a great passion for, Dave, so they're coming up next.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Visit Windsor Motor Mall Galway and get free 3-year warranty on hundreds of used cars.
Good morning, you're listening to Galway Talks with John Murray. Reminder, if you want to go to that Black and Irish event in the Town Hall on Saturday, text in Town Hall now to 086 38 33 553. Do so straight away to be a chance of winning a pair of tickets to that. Now though, I'm joined in studio by Tara Duffy, who is the founder of Galway's only not-for-profit yoga studio. Tara, good morning.
Good morning, John. Thanks for having me on.
It's good to have you with us. Talk to us about yourself, though, and how you got into the whole area of yoga first.
Sure. Well, I was working in London as a journalist about 20 years ago, and I joined my local gym. I went to different classes there, and one day I forgot my runners. So the only thing available was a yoga class, and I just really enjoyed it. I enjoyed that it was kind of like stretching, a little bit like what I remembered from being young and going to gymnastics classes. And what really kept me back was just the sense of calm after the class. I think the main reason that I realized that yoga was also a physically challenging activity was that I didn't go to the gym for a couple weeks because I was just going to the yoga classes. And then I came to go to my class, my teacher wasn't there, and I found out that I could go back to the gym, and I hadn't kind of lost that 2 weeks of not coming to the gym classes. So it was a physical and mental release.
Mm-hmm. So when did you come back here to Salt Hill to set up this not-for-profit yoga studio?
So that was just after COVID. It's something I'd been thinking about for a long time. I'd been teaching in Galway, and I'd lived overseas for a brief while as well. And I really wanted to make yoga available for everyone. There's a lot of obstacles to why people don't do yoga. Some of them might be personal. You don't think you have time, or mental, or the motivation. And it can also be financial. Can I afford to go to a class every week? Or possibly due to illness, am I too weak to even start yoga? So none of these should be barriers to prevent people from accessing yoga on a regular basis. Mm. And that's really what the studio is set up to provide, is yoga accessible on a regular basis, not just a one-off, come to a free class. So we've been doing that by reaching out through local partners, NGOs. We work with COPE. We work, both at the venue of various NGOs, and then we also provide a weekly community class so people can kind of pay what they can afford for that weekly class.
Okay. And in terms of the mainstream yoga classes you do as well, I know a lot of that is redistributed to go towards the work you do with those other partners.
Yes. So that's the model. When I first started talking about a not-for-profit yoga studio, some of the other studios that, I'd worked with in the past are like, what are you talking about? We barely make any profit to begin with. And it's true. We're not going to get rich teaching yoga. But there is that small margin, and we're reallocating that slim margin of the classes that we charge, I guess what you could call for the market rate in Galway. And we're trying to be able to pay our teachers to teach the classes in the community with our partners, because everyone, all yoga teachers would love to make it more accessible to a wider population, but it's whether or not, we have the time and the resources to do so. So that's the model that we're working off.
It seems like a very relaxed type of lifestyle, and you're in a beautiful place there in Salt Hill for it as well. If people haven't been involved in yoga before, what advice would you give to them?
I would say that yoga is really for everyone. Whether you haven't been very active physically in the last few years, or whether you train weekly with the GAA and you need a slower pace type of mental and physical way of working, and really to come and try a few different classes, because every class is a little bit different. You might have a very active class where you really work up a sweat. You might have a slightly slower class when the focus is more on the breath. It doesn't matter your age. We have classes that are more focused towards seniors. And we have a special at the moment, which is an unlimited classes for a month for €88. It's an intro offer, so people can really kind of get a sense for, what works for their schedule and their physical ability.
Brilliant. Now, you run a weekly community yoga class every single Sunday at 1 in the afternoon. And if people want to get more information on your services, where can they get them?
So you can check our website, which is yogadarshana.ie. That's yoga, DARSANA.ie. You can also email us at yogadarshana.ie@gmail.com or call 083-382-9350. And our website has all the information on our different class levels, our pricing levels, and various options.
Brilliant. Before I let you go, you were a journalist for many years with the AP. What do you make about the current state of politics?
In which country?
All over the world.
I think it's moving towards a very divisive situation in all over the world. And not to bring everything back to yoga, but, you know, we'd like to see more community. We'd like to see more sort of working together rather than working to be separate silos. So yoga is really the time to come away from that and to take a mental break.
Brilliant. Tara Duffy, thank you for joining us on Galway Talks. From yoga to soprano singing, I'm joined in studio by Helen Hancock. Helen, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
It's great to have you in with us again. Now, you are doing a number of concerts in Galway in Germany.
Yeah, so I have a concert this Sunday in St. Nicholas's Church at 3 o'clock called Ring on My Finger. And the programme is, well, the first half in particular is a very romantic programme. We're doing the Frauenliebe und Leben song cycle by Schumann, which is, do you want to hear the story of Robert Schumann and his wife?
Go on for it.
This is a lovely romantic story for a Wednesday morning. So Robert Schumann fell in love with Clara, his soon-to-be wife, when she was about 16. But he'd known her since she was about 9 because he was taking piano lessons with her father. And he started to fall for her and assumed that the father would be absolutely fine with her marrying a distinguished musician like him. But that was not to be the case. Clara was a child prodigy and she was making a fortune traveling all over Europe playing concerts. And her father, of course, being her father, owned all the money from all the concert fees. So he didn't want her marrying someone at all, especially not Robert. In the end, they had to go to court to be allowed to marry. Imagine, because back then a woman was the property of her father until she married. And finally, in 1840, they were allowed to marry. This couple had a really special relationship. You know, they wrote letters to each other and they composed songs for each other. And he wrote her a set of 25 songs as the wedding present. I mean, you know, in modern terms, this seems very romantic. Yeah, and in the year they married, he wrote this song cycle, which translates as A Woman's Life and Love. And it was based on a set of poems that already existed, which described in a woman's voice her feelings upon falling in love with someone and getting engaged to them and having a baby and all the rest, right through to the final song where her husband dies. Mm. And it was very unusual back then for a woman to, for poetry to appear in the voice of a woman. It was more often in the voice of a man. So this is a very romantic cycle, which is performed. Takes about a half an hour and it takes you on a roller coaster of a journey from a young lady's first meeting a man to finally losing him as his spouse. So,
Can you give us a blast of it? I know your voice, you're resting it, but can you give us a blast of what we can expect, a little preview?
So the fourth song in the cycle is called Du Ring on Meine Finger, which is Ring on My Finger, which is the moment where obviously he's asked her to marry him. And I'm just going to sing a couple of phrases of it. I don't have a pianist with me here today.
Yeah.
But just so you get an idea. Du ring on meinem finger, mein goldenes Ringelein. Ich drücke dich fromm an die Lippen, dich fromm an die Lippen, an das Herze mein. And it goes on in that vein, which basically is, you ring on my finger, I press you to my heart, and you have transformed my life. And now all these possibilities are open to me now that I'm going to marry you. How romantic do you need it to be?
So anyone looking to pop the question, get down this Sunday at 3 o'clock to St. Nicholas's Collegiate Church in Galway City. But you're also doing a bit of a tour of Germany as well.
Yeah, so Culture Ireland and the Embassy of Ireland in Germany announced a programme last year. It was going to be an Irish season in Germany in 2024, and it's called Zeitgeist Ireland. And Zeitgeist kind of means flavour of the times. So it's everything from music to ballet to, I don't know, maybe not ballet, dance, circus, everything, all art forms. Mm-hmm. And I'm performing a programme with a German pianist in Würzburg in June in Germany. So Würzburg is the Irish city of Germany. So there was a Saint Killian from Ireland who apparently was beheaded there. So there's this mad connection between Würzburg and Ireland, and they have an Irish studies faculty out there. And there's like a twinning between Wicklow and Würzburg. So there'll be a good audience for music that's got some Irish composers in it in this concert. So in that concert in Germany, I'll do this Frauenliebe und Leben cycle that I'm doing this weekend. But I'll also feature the work of Irish composers, Chris Thorlinchig and Rio Farrell, and then some historic Irish composers as well. So it's a real meeting of Ireland and Germany, this programme, and which I think is the idea of the Culture Ireland season anyway. They're trying to promote Irish artists abroad, particularly in Germany. I mean, recently, David Brophy, who was the conductor of the RTE Concert Orchestra, he has become a conductor of an orchestra in Germany only recently. So Irish artists always do well in Germany. And I think this is something that Culture Ireland want to capitalise on more.
Definitely. But you've had a remarkable career yourself. Take us back, for those who don't know you. You started off with a career as an engineer before leaving it to devote yourself to classical music.
Yeah, so I'm from Dublin and I studied mechanical engineering in UCD, and my first graduate job in Boston Scientific is what brought me to Galway. And when I came, I had no notion at all that I would stay here. I really thought, I'll do 2 years and I'll go back to Dublin or something. But sure, that's life, and that's what Galway does to people. And I stayed and I worked as an engineer for many years, and I sang simply in Galway Baroque Singers. And greatly, greatly enjoyed it. But when the kids were born, I just thought, no, this is something is niggling at me. I need to go back to music. So I walked away from the sensible job, which a lot of people probably thought I was completely mad, and went back teaching in Cool Music and Arts in Galway. And after a couple of years, this is mental, my kids were in a Gael school and they didn't know their Christmas carols in English. And I thought, I'll start a children's choir so they learn their carols in English, because they need to know their carols in English. And then I decided I need to learn how to conduct. So I went into choral conducting summer school, and it was there I met my teacher, Owen. And that was in 2015. And I went back to serious vocal studies. Now, I had done vocal studies back in Dublin in the Royal Irish Academy years ago when I was in college. But the solo stuff had been put on ice for many years. And to be honest, I thought that ship had sailed. But once I got going at it again, it just it's kind of taken off, I suppose. And got a life of its own. And I recently kind of cut out my teaching so that I could just focus more on the performance side and get more practice done every day and stuff. So here we are. So I'm very active in Galway. I also conduct the Marine Singers Choir in Oranmore and a few bits and pieces. But this concert also features a cellist and a pianist. The cellist, Esther, is my daughter's cello teacher, and she is a Hungarian cellist who recently arrived in Galway and is trying to establish herself here musically. And so we have some pieces in the second half that are written for voice, cello and piano. And one of them is Schubert's Auf dem Strom by the River, which is about 10 minutes long, and it's absolutely beautiful piece. The cello in that is just so emotional. And so it's not just singing. There's the cello aspect in this concert as well. So there's more variety for the potential audience to enjoy.
Definitely. You've had a busy few years since COVID as well. Some of the highlights: the Ulysses Centenary Celebration at the Embassy of Ireland Berlin, the Rathfarnham Castle Dublin Concert Series. It's been busy.
Yeah, this thing with Germany started a couple of years ago. Originally, I went on a holiday at the end of COVID to Berlin, family holiday. And I said to Sinead Hayes, a conductor friend from Galway, do you know any vocal coaches in Berlin? You know, I might just get some coaching while I'm there. And that started this thing with Berlin. And then I applied for Arts Council funding and I got it to go back and get some coaching in Berlin. And I told the embassy in Berlin, I'm going to be in Berlin, you know, these times. And if you ever have anything, you know, just let me know. And they rang me quite short notice and said, actually, the centenary celebration of Ulysses is happening. And if you're willing to stay on an extra few days, will you sing at it? And so that started this thing with Berlin in 2022, which has kind of continued. I have a real love of the German Lieder. Lieder is the word for German song. And I just seem to have an affinity with it. A lot of musical things that have happened for me have been German. Katharina Baker, who runs Cool Music, is German. My first conducting teacher was German. These guys out in Berlin that have been coaching me in Lieder, obviously are German. Like, Germany seems to be coming at me left, right and centre for whatever reason. I think maybe I have a past life or something in Germany coming back to haunt me. But and even started, like, I mean, I'm singing very well in German. I don't speak very good German at all, but I've been doing some lessons to try and improve it.
But classical music, it's huge in the continent.
Huge. More people will go to live opera in Germany than go to live soccer.
Wow.
Like, that just goes to show the difference between Ireland and Germany. And that's why so many Irish opera singers end up making genuine careers in Germany, because in Germany, you can get, you know, a job in an opera house, and you know you're going to get paid. It's a contract for a season. so you can actually live and pay your rent and not be on the breadline and actually make a career and a life for yourself in Germany. And Irish artists, for some reason, seem to go down very well there. And I think it's probably the warmth of our personalities and it just seems to work. So now I haven't embraced the opera scene at all because I have kids and I have them all playing music. One of my kids was actually playing music in here with me the last time I was on radio. Mm-hmm. And actually, the two boys are in a string quartet who are doing a little guest performance on Sunday in this concert just to give them a little showcase. But the concert platform and the recital platform have worked a lot better for me just with my life circumstances the way they are, although my kids are getting much older now, so it's getting easier to be much more free to be hopping on aeroplanes regularly, which I am now. I'm back over to Berlin next week for more rehearsals. But classical music in Germany is a big, big thing. And I know, like, I've been told the church where we're performing in Würzburg seats 250, and I'm told 100% that'll be full, you know. Wow. And that's never a given in Ireland. It's really, like, it might be for certain programs in the concert hall or the bigger venues, but certainly in more regional venues, you're not going to get 250 unless you've maybe 5 or 6 or 7 different acts involved to try and increase audience. So that's the difference between how this goes down in Germany compared to Ireland. But I am on a mission, always on a mission, to try and make this more accessible and to make people realise this is not some kind of stuffy, snobby, inaccessible. It's just music. And I actually am going to have the programmes printed with all the translations of the songs on Sunday. So people, and I always introduce my songs and explain them so people can connect with what the music is about, because obviously if it's in a different language, it's not obvious what it is unless you're told. And people have always said to me in my concerts, oh, you explained what that aria is about and now I know what it means. And then I enjoyed it so much more because I knew what it was about, because I've always heard it, you know, but I never knew what it was about. And that's the thing. We need to break down the barriers in classical music and make it more accessible. Because at the end of the day, back in Handel's time, you know, when Handel's Messiah was first performed in Dublin, I mean, the women were asked to remove the hoops from their dresses because they were trying to pack them in. So popular was it. They had to leave their hoops outside. And it would have been quite a rowdy affair because back then music was for everybody. Classical music wasn't some kind of snobby thing.
Yeah.
And so I'm on a mission to kind of get back to the... Having to ask people to leave their hoops outside on Sunday would be great.
Brilliant. It's Ring on My Finger. It's being performed in St. Nicholas's Collegiate Church in Galway on Sunday at 3 o'clock. How do people get tickets?
It's on Eventbrite. Just look up Ring on My Finger, Helen Hancock. And you can also pay at the door. And actually, there's concessions on the door as well for OAPs, etc. And that's €10. And I've just left the concessions at the door. Otherwise, full price tickets, €15, are on Eventbrite. So.
Brilliant. Helen Hancock, thank you for joining us on Galway Talks. Still to come on the programme today, we're looking at history talks, and this time we have Etna Verling in studio to talk about a stunning Galway computer simulation which shows historical sites from the 17th century.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Find hundreds of used cars to suit your budget in Windsor Motor Mall Galway, located on the Monavay Road.
Good morning, you're listening to Galway Talks with John Morley. It's time for History Talks, as it is every Wednesday at 11:45, and I'm joined in studio by Etna Verling, the Director of the Galway City Museum. Etna, good morning.
Good morning, John.
You're here to talk to us about a beautiful new exhibition you have, and it's very modern.
Well, it's a new exhibition called Surrounded by Stone, and it's on the ground floor of the museum, and it's the story of... I suppose, about all the stone monuments in Galway. We know, we all know when we're nearly home, when we see the stone walls and you see the stone monuments. So it's taking a story, I suppose, from Dunaingusa and the forts on the Aran Islands and those amazing, the seven stone forts over there,
wow.
All beautiful and one more enigmatic than the other in some ways. And then we have a story of the early church in Galway as well, because we've so many amazing churches. And then there's the stone city. So it's kind of going from the prehistoric, you know, the late Bronze Age and the stone forts on the Aran Islands through these lovely little churches and up to Clonfert and then on to the stone city, the medieval city. So we had a big exhibition about the medieval city a few years ago. And then for Galway 2020, we took that out to put in this big exhibition called Monument, which was about the forts on the Aran Islands. And now we just were really missing that story. So we've put in a new exhibition all about the stone city, you know, the city that started with Thurlough O'Connor back in the 1100s. Mm. And we tell that whole story And I think what you're referring to there, John, is we've worked with a company called Real Sim, who are based in the university, and they do an awful lot of kind of augmented reality and virtual reality using a lot of gaming technology. Mm-hmm. They're a wonderful company, and they do a lot of kind of reconstructions for people to understand sites better and monuments better.
Yeah.
So we worked with them about 10 or more years ago to do a kind of a walk through the medieval city. And since then, they've completely upgraded that. They've added new kind of textures. I don't know if you're familiar with Minecraft, but all that kind of those textures that you'd have in that. But they have this brilliant experience now, really, inside. As soon as you come in the door of the museum into the Surrounded by Stone exhibition, you'll see it. So it's a projected, there's a projected kind of walk through the medieval city, and there's also a console that you can manipulate. So you can, there's an amazing map of Galway called the 1651 map. It's a pictorial map, and it's a beautiful map. And we're using that as the kind of baseline for it. So you can, you can press on, there's a whole lot of different kind of arrows on it, and you can be standing outside Lynch's Castle and looking down Chop Street as it was in 1650.
Wow.
Or you could be standing at the Spanish Arch and looking at the arches and looking at boats right beside you there in the water. And we've added new sections to it as well. The Augustinian church and the star-shaped fort, which is at Fort Hill. And we've added in a whole new section on Eyre Square. But it's just, it's really popular. Everyone is drawn to it. So that's a kind of a wow part of it. But another big wow is we've the sword and mace, the city sword and mace on display. And they haven't been on display for a few years as well. Mm. And we probably have two of the best examples in the country of a sword and mace. And, you say, well, what's exciting about that? Well, the sword is from 1610. And it is just, it's an artwork of its own right. But it's got a very, very, very strong, probably much earlier German blade on it. So you see, I often go into this room we have with the silver in it. See, young fellas kind of all looking at the sword, wondering how heavy it would be. It's kind of like the sword and the stone. It's tied in with loads of gaming, that the sword is. And then the mace itself is a fantastic piece. And that's from about 1710. A huge, huge, it weighs so many pounds in silver, solid silver, and it's beautifully decorated. And that those two have an amazing history because they ended up in a place called San Simeon, which belonged to Randolph Hearst, who was a huge, big kind of newspaper magnate. And he actually ended up buying them in 1930s in Sotheby's. And brought them to California. And then when he died, he left a bequest for them to come back to Galway. So we have them on display in this room that has silver material in it. Beautiful. So we're very excited about the whole exhibition, John, because it also brings us, shows the churches. We have so many beautiful churches, including Clonfert, I suppose, which is the most amazing a piece, and then even the little churches like the one out in Ilan Machdara and the ones on the Aran Islands, small little tiny oratories. So, and then of course we have the whole Dunengus story and all the objects from the National Museum there. So,
But Galway's medieval city, it's a huge attraction, particularly for international tourists and even ones from the continent as well. You walk through in this simulation different parts and periods of Galway City, and it takes you right up into the 1800s as well, from the 1600s.
It does. And that's the lovely thing about that simulation, is that you can be any street that you're standing on. Let's say you're in Abbeygate Street, so you can see Abbeygate Street as it was in the 1600s. Then you press a button and you see it as it is now. So you can see, though, John, that the map of Galway has not changed. That medieval core that we saw in the 1651 map, like we did the excavations. I worked on all the city excavations back in the late 80s, early 90s. And that map was our map. It was so accurate. Where it said there was a castle, you dug, there was a castle, or there was a tower, or there was the bastion, the big, beautiful lozenge-shaped bastion under the Eyre Square Centre.
Yeah.
So it's really accurate still, that map is. And the cityscape, as it hasn't changed at all. It's still the same,
And even iconic places like the Spanish Arch and the changes have been there over the years.
Yeah, that's right. And the Spanish Arch, we're doing a big extension, John. We're, doing a multi-million euro extension at this stage. And we're building a whole new I suppose, wing to the museum, which is going to feature walks. You know, you'll be able to walk onto the top of the arch. In and then Comerford House, you know, the lovely little house beside the Spanish Arch, that's going to be completely refurbished. And then we're building a three-storey extension over just beside Comerford House there. So we're very excited about that. And we'll be able to bring a lot more of that medieval story and, in fact, reveal some of the archaeology that lies beneath those sites as well as part of the exhibition.
Mm. I know in the modern day there's calls for a light rail system in Goa City, but there actually was a tram back in the day.
There was a tram back in the day, and a very successful tram that went all the way out to Salt Hill. In fact, we have some of the objects from that still. I mean, it would be fantastic, wouldn't it, to have something like that back in the city as well, just to take people around.
Other exhibitions you have at the museum?
We've loads, but we've another, I suppose, our other most recent exhibition is on the top floor. We have a big MedTech exhibition there that was curated by Coram, who are the MedTech Research Centre in the university. We worked with them, did a kind of a co-pro or a co-curation with them. It's a really high-end exhibition showing the importance of MedTech in Galway, because it is the most important cluster, I think, outside of the United States. It's the biggest in Europe, and it has all that kind of facts. But we have a lot of objects in it as well, because it's a museum. So we have an amazing kind of field amputation kit that we got on loan from the Royal College of Surgeons. We have loads of kind of early eye, you know, models, and a whole kind of set of defibrillators, but also, what do you call them? Thanks for your heart. Should know.
Monitor.
Pacemakers.
Pacemakers, yeah.
Yeah, so you can see how they grew, you know, how they're now tiny little things and they were massive before. Mm. So we've all that on the top floor and loads of interactivity for kids. There's a game there as well that you can test your fitness. So there's a lot there. And also we have a beautiful exhibition. We created an outdoor exhibition space during COVID so that we could bring the museum out. So all along the sides of the museum, we have these kind of panels. And we have a beautiful exhibition there from Colin Stanley, who's out in Merlin Park Woods. He took these, it's all biodiversity. And if you saw it, they're artworks, like showing butterflies and bees and flowers and birds, all from Merlin Park Woods. That's Colin Stanley's exhibition. And that's on until July.
Brilliant.
There's loads going on at the museum all the time.
Brilliant. It's been a pleasure. Etna Verling, the director of the Goa City Museum. Thank you for joining us on History Talks on Goa Talks.
Thank you, John.
Coming up on the programme tomorrow, it's already very busy. We're looking at Uber because Galway is one of 23 counties with less taxi licences compared to pre-COVID levels. We have the Connacht Tribune headlines with Dave O'Connell. Dr. Kathleen Fitzgerald joins us from Pro Consult Counselling Service. We also look at Culture Corner and That They May Face the Rising Sun. It's a wonderful production. Ars Protect, we have Dr. Noel Doyle, a research executive from Leave No Trace Ireland, ahead of a number of meetings they have. And we have Music Mornings. Tomorrow is the turn of Maeve Walsh because she has a lovely song composed with a local composer as well. But that's where we make our leave from this morning's programme. My thanks to Sean Mulcheron, who produced, Siobhan, who took your calls on reception. And we'll be back with you again tomorrow. And if you want to get involved in tomorrow's programme, please do so. And the winner for the Corch tickets, I can tell you, is Mary Rattigan. Congratulations, you're going to the Black and Irish event on Saturday at a time of your choice. So get on to reception for more details on that. That's where we make our leave this morning, though. Up next is Ronan Lardner with the Livewire. Stay safe and have a very good afternoon.
Galway Talks in association with Windsor Motor Mall. Visit Windsor Motor Mall Galway on the Monavay Road, a new way to car shop.